it's a real problem and getting a lot worse. Speaking of a real problem and getting a lot worse, the My Doom worm is spreading via search engines. The latest variant finds email addresses on your hard drive and looks for them on search engines and sends stuff out. So if you have not updated your antivirus software, please do so. Speaking of which, Microsoft's latest security push has analysts a little upset. If Microsoft, in fact, ties its new antivirus software too closely to Windows or prices it way below market of the other antivirus software programs, the antitrust regulators could once again be turning their attention toward Microsoft. If you're one of the people who's been waiting for a Gmail account, take heart. Google is opening up the product to more and more people. There's a great thing in Congress right now called SPY Act, S-P-Y-A-C-T, which stands for Securely Protect Yourself Against Cyber Trespass Act. It's HR Bill number 29. What's interesting is the theory is this is supposed to prevent you from having any cyber trespassing. Well, they've completely exempted cookies. They've included phishing and keystroke logging and homepage hijacking, ads that can't be closed down, but cookies are out. So pretty much anything that tracks cookies on your system is absolutely legal. Isn't that a lovely thing? I think we'll find that people are going to be a little upset about that. We reported last week about a Bluetooth-capable worm that was hitting cars. Lexus says it's not going to infect their cars, so all of our thousands of listeners who have Lexuses.
Would that be
all
Lexi?
Set. Lexi, Lexium, Lexia. Lexography.
How'd you get that verb?
You want to send me that other set of papers under there? Yeah, thanks.
Your internet's up now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Excellent.
The cord was loose.
Oh, the cord was loose.
You know how those little clippies that break the second you look at them funny? Well, it's broken.
The cord was loose. Excellent. All right. For those of you who've been following the SEO saga, you'll find that NASDAQ might be delisting the SEO group. These are the people who have been suing everybody on earth.
SEO does not own Unix.
SEO apparently doesn't own much of anything, and their stock has dropped so much, and they've spent so much time, effort, and money on suing other people that they've simply ignored their business.
Oh, we have our own products to sell? Ooh, I forgot.
Exactly, and they're done now, and so SEO may be delisted because they're just doing so incredibly badly at everything. So go ahead, tell us what's going on in the. Are you ready for the Mac world?
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent.
We've got a couple of weird things happening again. Some more lawsuits coming out in the Apple world. Couple of things that are odd. That someone. I lost it. Darn it. Someone is suing. Where is it? Class action suit. About Apple dealers and Apple service contracts, that someone is apparently mad that their computer didn't get serviced a day out of warranty, and so they're upset and suing Apple. So that claiming that Apple misappropriation of trade secrets, a breach of contract, violating the Consumer Legal Remedies Act and the Song-Beverly Act, both consumer protection laws that require companies to support their products. In fact, it's interesting reading through some of Apple's warranty statements that California has some really strict consumer protection laws that you have to support a product for like 1,000 years.
Yeah, right.
After the product has been discontinued. So that parts for ancient computers we can't buy here in New York, Apple still has to provide in California. You know, if you want to fix your computer that's 100 years old and needs a $1,000 part,
now, not under warranty.
Right, not under warranty, but they have to support it. And also the EFF is suing Apple, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, suing Apple over Apple lawsuits, which is interesting. You may remember a few months ago, Apple sued some unnamed web posters on websites for releasing information about Apple's upcoming products, the Tiger software, the Mac Mini product. Of course, most of them all missed the iPod Shuffle, which was interesting. So it's interesting to see what rumor sites are right, what rumor sites are wrong, and what wild rumors never actually see the light of day. Right. But the EFF is suing Apple for basically trying to blow the whistle on reporters under the First Amendment, that a reporter is allowed to protect his source, even if the source is doing something illegal, apparently.
All right.
Yep.
It's their source. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And before we get to the phones and all the other stuff, I do want to mention one more thing. Rootkits. Rootkits are really scary. Basically, a rootkit is a malicious program that uses hooks in the system itself to conceal its presence on the system. And it often runs as root. For example, it might monitor if the user opens Windows Task Manager in order to keep itself out of the list of system processes. It filters directory listings to remove its own files from them. They could be anywhere and you wouldn't even know about them. Now, they've been a fact of life in the Unix world for a very long time. They're not easy to get. You actually have to be mostly running as root to install one, or have any one of a dozen well-known holes that have been fixed for years in certain pieces of software that are running as root to get one. But they're starting to appear under Windows, and there's no fix for them yet. You'll see them coming out, but it's something you need to be aware of. And apparently I wasn't aware that this was a four-minute bit. So we'll be back. Are we taking another break? Is that what's happening?
The news happens at the bottom of the hour.
Oh, the news happens at the bottom of the hour.
Rochester's news leader.
You are Rochester's, not you personally.
Not me personally.
Wham is Rochester's news leader.
That's right.
1180 WHAM. Yeah. So we're going to let them do the news, and we will follow them on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm a mess.
You are that this morning. Holy mother of pearl. It's just been good all the way around, hasn't it?
He's so panicked that his computer failed. The backlight on my laptop failed, so I can't see the screen there.
We couldn't get internet access. Loose cable.
I think something happened last night where, like, the computer gods got mad at us all because my computer worked fine before I went to bed, and I opened it up this morning.
How many times have we said that to someone? You know, it worked fine last night. I turned it on this morning, and it doesn't work. Something must have happened.
Right, you did something.
You did something.
But the funny part is, it was sitting in my bag. So I what I'm saying?
Same thing on mine. I closed the lid last night. It was working fine. I opened the lid this morning. No lights.
We still talking about the computer?
Yeah, we are. What are you talking about?
Hi-yo.
Okay,
oh, thank
then.
You very much.
And Steve is now recording, so I've got the stream up, but nobody's... Oh, yeah, one person is connected. Somebody in Florida, I believe. Very nice. I love to see that. We're going to... Could you go back and run the board so that I can say our first caller? Jeez and crackers. He's overlooking. Steve's working on his. Dave's working on. Oh, I see. Bringing up. I see. So can we go to the phones now? Is that okay with you? Is that all right with you? Thank you very much. Our first call. I don't know what it is. It's our first caller is David from the up on the hill in Pennsylvania. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Work the button, Rob.
Okay, David, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah,
can you hear us now?
It just took him a second to connect me.
Exactly.
Modern technology.
He's forgotten how what all the buttons are for. It's been a whole week.
Still on the hill here in Pennsylvania, guys.
Very nice.
Question for you, context is Windows XP Pro.
Mm-hmm.
I did an installation of Windows XP Pro. The computer uses, instead of a mouse, I use a trackball, which is a serial connection. And, you know, the installation was uneventful. Everything, you know, works fine. No problems, other than the fact that about half the time that I boot up, and also during the time I was putting in the upgrades and would, you know, constantly need to reboot, Windows XP Pro lost track of my COM port 1 to which the trackball was connected. It's just really annoying. And the only way I could solve the problem was to remove and then reinstall. That required a reboot. I would do the rescan without rebooting, it would not find it. But when I would reboot, it would be found upon reboot. You got any clue what I could be doing wrong?
It sounds like you might have a port that's going, but...
Is the serial port on a card or on the motherboard?
It's on the motherboard, connects to the motherboard. Let me say this, though. I'm respectful of what Dave said. I can be on the computer for 10 hours, mm-hmm. and as long as I don't shut it down and then reboot, there is no problems. Because I was looking, too, for like an electrical problem,
yeah.
or a connection problem or something like that. But at first I thought that's what it was. But now I don't, not anymore, because it only happens when when I'm starting from scratch or when I reboot the computer. It seems like it's more an operating system.
Have you checked in the BIOS to make sure it's being it's turned on in the BIOS, and it's set to 3 or auto, or you might want to force it instead of doing auto, have it go to the very first COM port, which is 3F8.
Yeah, it sounds like for some reason Windows Auto Hardware Detect isn't detecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it detects it about half the time.
What I would do then is I would suggest. Check in the BIOS. If it's set to auto, usually you can change it.
Okay.
And change it to 3F8. That's for COM 1.
3F8 hex.
Yeah, that's the COM port 1.
Okay.
All right, give that a shot and see if that follows. Because the auto might be searching, and with plug and pray, you know, it doesn't always do it.
There's also the fact that if you have two mouse drivers in your system,
one for the mouse, one for the trackball.
Well, or one for a serial port and one for a non-serial port.
Okay.
The non-serial port often wins.
Okay.
That's a Microsoft prejudice.
Okay.
So look and see if, in fact, you've got two mouse drivers loaded. Look in the device manager.
Okay.
And see if there's two mice there, and remove the non-trackball one.
I appreciate that, guys. Have you got time for a 30-second fun story?
Yeah.
No, we apparently don't. Apparently we're on a hard break. I'm sorry,
okay.
David. I really apologize. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Soundbites.
Yeah, like we were just talking a second ago. I'd like to know if some of the other
listeners... can't mention what we were just talking about a second ago. Oh, you mean before
there.
That?
Not
okay,
there.
Okay, all right, fine.
No, what's the... Yeah, no, we can't go there. No, what we were talking about as far as SpyBot. One thing I was just curious on whether any of our other listeners have been experiencing it, but I've been seeing this for the past few days when trying to do any of the updates for SpyBot, that, you know, you can sit there and click on it and say update, select them all, and it runs and it runs and it runs, and then all of a sudden it died. You know, you keep getting bad checksums coming back as a report. So I'm just curious if anybody else has been experiencing that too.
So if you have,
let me know.
Give us a call.
Not that we'll be able to fix it, but at least Dave will know it's not just him.
It's not just him.
In fact,
exactly.
That's one of the biggest bonuses of this show. It's not just you. Other people have the problem, too.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that is the truth, isn't it? Often enough, when you talk to somebody and they've described their tale of woe and they feel so bad about it, and you say, okay, we see that a lot, the first thing you hear is,
it's
you
not
really
just
do.
It's, me.
Oh, it's not me.
Notice this computer. We won't say whose computer I'm working on.
I don't think that would be a good idea.
But
what do you think?
But the certain individual we've been touting to update,
yeah,
was using an older version of Adaware.
Yeah. Yeah. And he'll now
I
be
mean, the
backing
current
up.
The version has been out for what? Six, 7 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
Still running the old one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he wonders why he's having trouble.
And he has no backup. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah.
No
yeah.
backup. Yeah.
Oh, I get that a lot. You know, I meant to back up.
Yeah, I backed up.
I meant to get your data back, too, but, you know.
Yeah, I've got a backup. You know, I backed up about 6 months ago. Is that okay?
That's okay with me. I don't know about you, but it's certainly okay with me. All right. Our next caller is Jeff from Henrietta, New York.
14 already.
Jeff, what's your question?
It's not a question. It's an add-on to your last caller.
Oh, good.
I love
when people do that.
I've noticed that Microsoft Windows, no matter what version you have, has a tendency to have multiple entries for hardware that you have, you might or might not have in your computer anymore.
Right.
After you update drivers and stuff, I've had a tendency to go into safe mode and make sure that there's not two videos,
mm-hmm.
two monitors, two mouse.
Right.
Connected to the same
Oh,
board.
That was a big thing with Windows 98.
And
you
I
could
found,
go in there and find six entries for just the floppy drive.
I found 9 for a mouse one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I found like 18 or 20 COM ports,
mm-hmm.
all of which were over 100. You know, like COM 108, COM 132. I thought, all right, I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
That's because Windows does an auto detect on every boot to see if you've installed something new. And a lot of times it sees something you already have. It's, oh, hey, you just put that in. I better add a driver for it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that causes conflict.
Yep.
There's resource problems.
Right. And so you should go through periodically and check to see that everything that's in your device manager is really in your system.
Especially after you add something.
Of course. Let us caution everyone. If you don't know, leave it alone. But if you find 8 mice and you only have one, and you know which one is the real one.
The only tree I don't touch is the motherboard.
Yeah, never touch the motherboard tree. Absolutely right.
The only one I don't touch unless I know for sure something's wrong.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Excellent point, Jeff. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. I love it when users call in and answer questions for us. Our next caller, Adrian from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Adrian. What's your question?
Good morning. I don't know if it's a hardware, software, or, I don't know, infection here.
Yeah.
But at posting, I'm running a RAID system.
Yep.
And I get a normal status on my, on my RAID volume port 0. And on port 1, I have it says error occurred. If I go into my disk management and check on the status of my volume C mm-hmm. drive, everything says healthy.
Okay.
If I go into my application for warning properties,
yeah,
it says that I have a warning event ID number 4,
mm-hmm.
and that is that my RAID volume 1 is in a non-redundant failed disk state. And I don't know if I should be concerned or not. It's running slower than it was. This warning...
Well, it's a non-redundant what?
Non-redundant failed disk state.
Is your RAID a stripe or a mirror?
It's a RAID 0. So it's a stripe.
Yeah.
And non-redundant sounds like a mirror error.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on the web there, and I can't find anything. I religiously run the Tango, and that is saying everything's clean.
Okay, that's very, very weird. a non-redundant failed disk state.
Is it a hardware RAID or a software
RAID?
Yeah,
what it sounds like, Boy, howdy. What it sounds like is that the drive itself has indeed failed, but how can that be if the stripe is still working?
What you might want to check and do, which you can do, is if you go to a command prompt window.
Okay.
And type in check disk.
Right. I've done that.
/R.
Oh, I'm sorry. Check disk.
You type in check disk space C colon space /R.
Okay.
And what it'll do is on the next boot up, it'll run a check disk and repair of your hard drive.
Okay.
And it you'll be able to watch it as it'll go on the screen. It goes through like 5 different steps. And you'll see if it'll find any errors or cross-linked files or anything else on that particular volume.
All right, I've run that.
You have?
Yeah, have you run? I might suggest replacing that disk. What I'm finding on the net is that everybody is saying if you start getting that error, it's time to start replacing drives. I hate to say that, but that's what I'm seeing on the net, at least.
Yeah, because it'll corrupt the...
It'll corrupt the other drive.
You can swap it out. Go to the other drive
exactly.
On the RAID.
We have to take a break. Going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Rush Limbaugh.
The headline, glaciers shrink, comma.
From PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Our next caller, Doug from Geneva, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
What? I have a question. I was working on an Excel project. And I was going to save it to my CDRW. And an error popped up saying something about administrative settings. Is this just something I can only save to my floppy, or I can't save it to a CDRW? Or
can you save other things to your CDRW?
If I use Music Match, I can save it. It seems like it's only documents that I can't save.
Well, Music Match isn't saving to a CDRW. Music Match is writing an AIF file. CDs are generally done with what's called authoring. You copy files you want onto it, and then they're burned. There are some hacks.
Packet writing stuff.
Right. Well, the packet writing stuff is almost a hack to the standard, where it tries to write files on the fly rather than writing a whole file at a shot. One of the problems with Excel and many documents is that they keep a lot of temp files open while they're working. So while you're typing along on something, there's a temp file. Then you hit save, and it may delete the temp file and save your full file. Well, it can't delete things from a CDR or CDRW. Generally, you can only erase a CDRW and write to it again. It's not a random rewrite like a hard drive is. So in general, you want to save all the stuff to your hard drive, and then when you're ready, burn it to a CD for backup and archive.
Right. Unfortunately, CDRWs, although they purport to be as good as floppies, aren't really the same thing. Particularly, as Steve said, when you have a lot of temp files open and a lot of pieces and parts scattered around the drive, it can cause all kinds of problems. The other thing to remember is that you only have a limited number of reads and writes in the lifetime of a CDRW. Both the drive and the disk. And if any individual disk, if you're rewriting and writing and rewriting all those pieces and parts and temp files, you're stressing it a lot more and ruining the life of it a lot more than if you were to actually create the thing on your hard drive, and then when you were done and closed it, copy that file over to the CDRW.
There's been a problem with Word and Excel for years that they don't delete their temp files when you're done. So you look in your temp directory, you'll find Word 0, Word 1, Word 2, Word 3.
And if you've left all those on the CDRW, you've got a lot less space on that than you do on your hard drive. And that
I guess my
up
concern
well.
Was the pop-up about changing the administrative settings.
Yeah.
Or is that, I don't know where that came from.
I'm not entirely certain either. I don't know what programs you've got running and what you're using specifically to do that stuff. So,
were you using the Windows Packet Write, or do you have something like DirectCD or Dragonburn installed?
DirectCD.
And other files you can drag onto the CD directly?
Yeah, it just seems like it's anything that has to do with, like if I'm in Microsoft Word or
right,
Excel.
Yeah, you cannot save a file to a CD. You have to drag copy it from your hard drive so it writes it to the disk.
All right. Well, can I ask one more quick question?
Yeah.
I installed Norton System Works, which I'll never do again.
Yeah.
Your worst nightmare come true.
It's absolutely horrible. I kept getting an error message, and I finally just said, ignore, and it seemed like it loaded. It seemed like everything refreshed okay. Mm-hmm. When I went to fire up Firefox, it looks like it's an older version. I really can't tell because I don't know what the newest version is. But all my bookmarks were gone, too.
It depends on what the error message in Norton was.
Yeah, you can, right. you can always do a search for bookmarks and import those back in.
It was error 104, whatever that means. Yeah, and I went on a Google search. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
I found a lot of complaint pages.
Yes.
About
Norton. Our suggestion, at this point at least, is to completely delete Norton System Works. But to get your bookmarks back, search your hard drive for a file called bookmarks.html.
Okay.
And then you probably find a small one in your Firefox, in the user directory, your user directory under Firefox. That's not the real one. That's the new one that's basically blank. You'll probably find a bigger one if, in fact, Norton didn't absolutely delete it.
Copy it and paste it
you'll
out.
You'll find
on the
a
desktop.
Bigger one, right. Move it over to that to the place where the little one is. And that's what you need to do. Yeah, we're beginning to recommend Norton System Works be
eliminated
until well, at least.
It's
get
not
to
a bad
point.
Program to run from the utility disks to correct errors, but don't
right.
install everything. It's just
yeah,
too
no,
much overhead.
Use it as an as-need basis and run it strictly off the CD.
Right, right, exactly.
It wants to take over too much of your machine.
Way too much. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back. And when we come back, we'll have a very special guest on the show. We'll take a look at the poll. We'll take a lot more of your calls. I even have a little thing I was going to read. The 100 largest metropolitan areas ranked in order of most to least stressful. The first surprise is that Rochester is one of the largest metro areas in the United States, the top 100. And we're at number 89, way down near the bottom of the list. It's just so pleasant and so non-stressful to live in Rochester. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest running... Toll free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, we promised you before the news that we would have a very special guest on today. And indeed we do. We are delighted and thrilled to welcome John Graumitz. Did I pronounce your name right, John?
Yes, Nick. Oh, excuse my voice.
That's okay.
You did. That's fine.
He's involved with the Lugor User Group, the Linux User Group of Rochester, L-U-G-O-R. And yesterday they had an install fest where people got to come down, bring their computers, and the Lugor folk would help them install Linux. Tell us a little bit about how it went.
I think it went fairly well, Nick, and many thanks to you and your crew as far as like providing the information about the event. We ran into at least two individuals that I talked with that had come and had listened to your show and came due to the promotion that you had about the event.
Great.
Super.
Yeah, thanks. And it went fairly well. I think we're going to do it again. We try to do one at least one per year. And our last was back in May of 2003. And it worked fairly well, I thought.
Yeah, excellent. About how many people did you have?
We had scheduled about 25 folks for about 30 slots, running from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon.
Right.
And we had about 25 out of the 30, as I say. And we had some people wandering in. And based on what we were able to do, we tried to fit them with a Linux operating system. or give them some advice.
Excellent.
A lot of new users?
I would say so, yes.
New to Linux, at least.
New to Linux, yes. Most of the users, I believe, were MS-type users.
Right.
Many laptops. It was interesting. More laptops than case-type PCs.
Well, at least you're the carry those around, though.
Well, that's right. True, too. And
well, but also, many people have an older laptop that doesn't really run Windows satisfactorily,
right,
but would be fine for playing with and learning about Linux.
That's true. Now, I must say, we have not had a group grow up since we had the event yesterday. So this is just my interpretation of basically what I saw. And my guess would be that if I was new to Linux or a new operating system, I wouldn't bring my main system in.
Right.
Although we did have some folks with dual boot systems. But a lot of laptops. It was interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you guys installed Simply Mepis?
Simply Mepis, yes.
That's one of the... Now, Linux, for those of you who are new to the whole idea, Linux is a free operating system that's free as in beer and free as in speech,
mm-hmm,
operating system. So it's both free to download as in no cost and free as in unencumbered by so many of the things that have digital rights management and stuff like that involved. It's a real full complete operating system. I personally am using it at work every day. I do still have a Windows laptop for those few proprietary programs that have been written in-house that do not run under Linux that I have to use for time reporting and stuff. But I use Linux for everything else, and I can do word processing and spreadsheet and the whole office suite. I can play all kinds of music. I can burn CDs and DVDs.
God, I had the website up. We had a few older machines, and there is some problems with that. We're talking about like EDUM-type memory, that kind of thing. I think anything within the last 3 to 4 years is pretty good, like a 500 megahertz processor. A little bit of RAM. Obviously, more is better.
No, yeah.
But you can run a limited stripped-down system on predominantly a lot of platforms.
Right.
And so we did see a few, but not many.
Excellent.
And it works better on, as I say, faster machines.
Well, and that's true of anything. You know, one of the problems that I often have with people is saying, they'll say, well, I tried Linux. I put it on my old 300 megahertz machine. It was real slow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be true. It would be real slow, and that has nothing to do with Linux and everything to do with the speed of your machine. I'll tell you, I'm running one of the nice things I really like about Linux is the multiple GUIs that you can run. There's GNOME, which is one of them. KDE is another. I personally run Window Maker. What?
Explain some of these to the
point. Yeah, the GUI, the graphical user interface. When you boot up into Windows, you have the taskbar across the bottom and the start button and all the stuff. Everything comes up in Windows, and that's all part of the GUI, the graphical user interface. And the only one most people are familiar with is the one that comes with Windows, because that's the only one they've ever seen. But under Linux, you can have any one of many running, and they're pretty neat. Simply Mepis uses what, John?
Simply Mepis right now is using KDE.
Which is very Windows-like.
Very much so, very much so. I personally use GNOME, or switch back and forth from KDE to GNOME. But that's one of the things that has really moved Linux on the forefront. Up to, say, 5 years ago, don't quote me on the numbers, but
right,
just generally speaking, 5 years ago, you're looking at basic command line programmers and users.
Right.
And once GNOME started up and once KDE provided a nice graphical user interface, desktop type, it makes life easier to use and more visual, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah, we likened a lot of it to the early days of DOS when it was just programmers and people that wanted to hack at the computer and play with things.
Right.
And it wasn't really until Windows came out that the average person could figure out how to use it.
Mm-hmm. And consequently, the hackers kind of...
Got annoyed.
But the other problem is they had to learn a whole lot more. It wasn't easy to write programs any longer under Windows.
Yep.
And the Mac has the same problem, actually. It's no longer as easy, and particularly that HyperCard is no longer There's a program called Revelation, which is a basically HyperCard for Linux.
Revolution.
What did I say?
Revelation.
Revolution. Right. HyperCard for Linux.
Yeah, but in the old DOS days, it was always wait till the user typed a command and then execute that command. With a graphical interface, the system is waiting for multitudes of things that happen. Did they move the mouse? Did they click the button? Did they click which button? Is their mouse over top of some other point? So it's just a lot harder to program. But you end up with easier to use. That's the dichotomy.
Right. So, John, tell us a little bit about Lugor itself, the Linux User Group of Rochester.
Okay, the Linux User Group of Rochester, Lugor, and that's lugor.org. Excuse me. That's our website.
Special thanks to the College of Business at RIT for providing the web space.
Quite frankly, we've gotten a lot of very good support through Rochester Institute of Technology.
Gabe Shepard, good guy. Works for me, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes, he does. And
very
he's
good,
wonderful.
Very good. And Dr. Peter Anderson is a member of our group, and
he's
very knowledgeable, very nice guy. The group has been together. We're basically Linux-type computer hobbyists. The organization, the group has been around for about 10 years now, and we meet third Thursday of most months at the RIT, the B. Thomas Golisano Computer Science Building in the auditorium at 7 p.m.
There you go.
And we have a list of probably between 100 and 200. It's a loosely formed group.
Well, it follows the Linux model in that you don't actually charge, and anybody can be a member just by showing up.
That is very true. It's a very nice group of people of varying degrees of expertise, and it's a very good way of learning the system. You can read books and you can look at the documentation, and this is a very well-documented operating system. But it's always nice to have somebody around that has done the task that you are doing. And if you run into a problem, somebody else might have done that. And so that's pretty much, it's a user-supported system.
Right. Right. And you folks have a new user SIG called Newbie SIG, Special Interest Group, so that if you are brand new to Linux, then you can actually show up here and not feel like, oh my gosh, I can't ask my question. I don't know, because everybody there is a newbie.
That's correct. Well, everybody's approachable. I just took a look at that site, and I think that might need a little updating.
Ah, there you go.
But we do, it's a very approachable group of folks. And basically, through our website, one of the better ways of doing it is to sign up for our mailing list, which is what we told predominantly most of the folks that were at our event yesterday. Go to our website, sign up for the mailing discussion list, come to one or two meetings, and try out the live CD, Memphis in this case, or if it was downloaded on your hard drive, try the system out and see how you like it.
And that's another thing to mention. There are quite a number of what are called live CDs. If you're interested in taking a look at Linux and seeing what it can do, but you don't want to make that commitment to put it on your hard drive, you can download and burn a CD, a bootable CD. Now, this assumes that you can actually boot your system from CD.
That's
older
important.
Machines can't. But if you can boot your system from the CD, you can burn one of these live CDs, put it in the drive, and it comes up, and bang, you're in Linux. You can do anything you want to do. And when you reboot the system without the CD, you're back in your Windows machine, and it's perfect. The only thing you have to remember is because it's on CD and because it's compressed, that loading programs is very slow because CDs are so much slower than hard drives. So you can't judge the speed and quality of the system from how slowly it loads programs. But once they're running at the speed of your system.
So put in an old P90 with a 1X CD drive?
Yeah, you could do that and then go to lunch while you do anything, whether it was Windows or Linux, yeah. But you're absolutely right, and it's wonderful for many people to be able to say, I've got a machine that is completely unencumbered by anything, any program I run I know is free, I can give it to anybody else, I can get programs from anybody else, I don't have to worry about copyright or anything like that. The licensing agreement allows you to do whatever you want with the software. So it's pretty nice and it's pretty free.
And like a lot of the benefits we have in the Mac world, you don't have to worry about viruses or spyware or Trojans or people trying to break into your system. And
but even so, you can still run. There's free antivirus software. There's free anti-spam software.
Yeah, so you don't pass that stuff along to your Windows using friends who haven't seen the light
yet. Right. I do run antivirus on my machine specifically for that reason because I want to be a good network citizen. So what else do you want to tell us about Lugor, John?
excuse me. Basically, what I'd like to say to the folks out there, it's there is a bit of a learning curve, as with anything.
Right.
But there's a lot of good user support in this Rochester area, also too in Linux user groups throughout the country. And one of the main websites for Linux that for a new person or any person to look at. For information would be www.linux.org. And you can go through that website and you can look for a user group in your area. And the one in Rochester, it's a really good group of computer hobbyists, very knowledgeable folks. And it's a good learning experience.
And as you said, very approachable. You can go up to any one of them and ask a question and not feel like you're imposing or that you're stupid or you're exactly.
Right. At our event, I mean, it catch people on a good day, obviously. But, you know, if someone ran into a problem, there was always someone around that maybe had a better idea of one part of the installation, say the bootloader or something like that, or configuration. There are people to ask. And what would happen is move somebody out, put somebody that was more knowledgeable in that particular area to help that person out. But I don't think too many people, most people went away feeling satisfied, and it was a time well spent.
Excellent. John, thanks so much for coming on and talking about Lugor. Folks who are interested, lugor.org, L-U-G-O-R.org, and the meetings are the third Thursday of the month. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Many, many, many thanks to John Graumans, who was kind enough to come in and talk to us about Lugor. Now, before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about identity theft. 335 of you voted, making it number 68 in the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. The choices were I worry about more about identity theft in the real world or online. And we have, once again, proving we have very smart readers and listeners. 68% of them worry more about identity theft in the real world, which is where it's really much more of a problem than online. This week's poll is about Linux. We talked to John about Linux, and now we're asking you about Linux, and it's just a simple choice, Linux. And the choices are, I still couldn't care less, I'm getting interested, I've played with it, I'm trying to use it more, and I use it every day. So far, 86 of you have voted. I'm getting interested is 37% of the votes, followed by I still couldn't care less by 24% of the vote, followed by I played with it, I use it every day, and I'm trying to use it more. So please vote in the poll and let us know what you think of Linux, how you feel about it. When you're done with that, you'll see that underneath the poll is a yellow box. And there's a link in there that says, give us your opinion. That will take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Thank you. Thank you, Woody. Thank you, Woody. A Walter Lantz cartoon. Once you get there, you'll be able to put in a little bit more of an opinion of what you think about the Linux itself. And when you're done with that, please come back and join us on soundbites.org in the forums where the niftiest people on earth hold sway every day. It's a great place to visit. Well, and then what am I doing? Okay, we're going to go back to the phones now. And our next caller is Paul from Chi-Lai, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi, I'm trying to run a high-end computer graphics software.
Uh-huh.
I've got two machines I've tried it on, and one it works, and it's just a simple...
Well, wait a minute. What's the software?
It's a PTC Pro Engineer.
Okay.
And it's a student of it, edition, and I've tried to run it on an e-machine that I bought for my kids, and I also have a Sony with a NVIDIA graphics card in it.
And which one does it work on?
It runs on the e-machine.
I would have thought it would have been the other way around.
Yeah, and I just updated the graphics card, and it flashes. When I click on the icon to boot it, it flashes in the taskbar, but it doesn't run. Now, I've also got another graphics system I tried to put in. It gave me a couple of error messages about runtime error 5, and there was another error that it gave me on crrun.dll.
Mm-hmm.
CR run or CL run?
What's that?
CR run or CL run?
I believe it was SCRRUN.dll. Now, could I just copy that .dll file and put it on my Sony? Or would that be a problem if I did that?
It probably would be a problem. But see, because you're not talking apples and apples. You're talking two different systems here as far as the BIOS chip, the motherboard, okay. You know, the video cards and everything else. What you might have to do is go to the company. Now, they're the same type of chipsets, you know, a Pentium versus an AMD or?
Yeah, they're two different. Actually, the best, the Sony's got a Pentium 4 in it.
You might have to go to the website for that particular software company and see if they've got any updates for, say, running it on a Pentium 4 versus an AMD.
Okay.
But the scrrun.dll is the scripting language runtime, and it's possible. It's possible that it's simply corrupted.
Okay.
Yeah.
So moving it from one machine to the other, the scrrun.dll that you think is corrupted,
right.
Copy it somewhere first in case you need to put it back.
Okay.
But it is a scripting error problem, and...
you can try running the system file checker and see if it finds any Windows issues.
Now, that's very true.
Is that fairly easy to run?
Yes. Go to start, choose run, and type SFC for system file checker. What operating system are you on?
I'm on Windows.
Which one?
Oh, X.
Then you have to do SFC space / run now as one word. And that will run the system file checker and repair any damaged system files. It may ask you to find your Windows CD or the i386 installation directory on your hard drive to reinstall something if it finds a problem.
Okay. I'll give that a try.
Give it a try. Let us know what happens. Thanks. SCRRun.dll does seem to be simply a scripting runtime.
Yeah, and trying to copy it from one to the other.
Well, it depends if they're the same version.
Yeah, what subversions of Windows does he have on each computer, exactly. And what patches are loaded on each computer?
It could affect it.
Right,
so
right.
It's better to go up to the site.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, one way or the other. Our next caller is Ron from Ontario, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Regarding SpyBot and the update with the checksum error, change your site that your mirror site. I was getting it all the time with the default site, the Secure, but it took it down to the one of the USA sites.
Mm-hmm.
Download it fine.
Oh, okay.
Because
I know, you know, we've just been using the default for a while, and all of a sudden I was getting bad checksum.
Yep, saw that a few times and changed the mirror site and was fine after that.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
I've got another one or two for you here quick.
Yeah.
Removing the old AdAware 6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I've got the AdAware SE going.
Yeah.
But I don't find the remove program for the AdAware 6. Just delete the directory and
everything?
Yeah,
you can just get rid of the directory.
Well, there should be an uninstall AdAware 6, and the AdAware SE installer will remove the old version for you.
Yeah, that'll remove it.
Well, it didn't.
Then you've got something else wrong.
Then, you can just go into Windows Explorer under Programs.
Right.
And you'll see the folder there for AdAware 6.
Now, there's an unwise. Is that the uninstall?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Okay, there's one built into that directory.
Yeah, and just delete that one.
Okay, your webcam, I'm not getting this week's show.
Yeah, you aren't kidding.
Neither are we.
We've got an amazing number of technical difficulties here.
Last week's show looks great.
Thank you so much. If you heard the beginning of this show, you knew that not only were our computers uniformly not right, but our network connection was not right, and most of our brains needed to be rebooted.
I was going to say, a Chinese fire drill was more organized.
It was pretty astonishing. So, no, there is no webcam this week. Sorry.
It's still in my bag. I didn't want to try to unpack it.
Yeah, right. There's some things that just aren't going to go.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
My question is, my current mail client I'm using is Thunderbird, and it's I like that a lot.
Yeah, me too.
But the problem is I'm going to be getting rid of my internet service provider, which is currently USA DataNet, which is out in Syracuse.
Sure.
And I'm not sure which one I'm going to switch to, but I noticed that there's some out there that are not compatible with Thunderbird or don't even say that they recommend using it. So do you have any recommendation when I switch to another email account?
Thunderbird.
Stick with Thunderbird.
Sure. Thunderbird will work with any internet service provider. It's generic
so
POP and generic
for Yahoo.
Those aren't internet service providers. Those
right.
Are,
they're not really
websites.
Internet service providers. Those.
Well, email accounts is what I mean.
That's the difference. Thunderbird is an internet mail account for internet mail. You can't use it with webmail.
So the places that provide only webmail, like Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Hotmail, any of the mail sites, are not real internet service providers. They only give you an interface through the web.
Okay.
And so those are the ones you have to avoid.
But there aren't any mail readers that work with webmail.
Hotmail will work with Outlook Express will work with Hotmail.
Because they're both from Microsoft.
If you pay.
Yeah.
So you're recommending to stay away from like Yahoo.com and Netscape.net because they're through the internet as far as email accounts.
Well, right. They're strictly web-based.
You have to subscribe to an internet service before you can get to those web pages and get to those mail services. So that's mail on top of the internet service you already subscribed to.
All right. Any recommendations, though, as far as a provider?
Most of the local ones are very good. If you're looking for inexpensive places, I'd let my fingers do the walking, pick up any copy of Computer Link magazine, which lists ads, which has ads for most of the local providers
and the
in town.
The deals that they have around.
And the deals that they have around. Those are your best place to look. Anything we recommend would probably be outdated by the time you went and got it. So check them and see what they have to say. You can find them also at techny.com. We try not to actually...
Yeah. Say a specific one.
Right. Our next caller is Ginny from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I was going to talk to Steve about the SpyBot also, but I see the gentleman answered the question.
There you go.
I just want to ask you one thing about Adware. I received a very nice note from Lori concerning the procedure for Adware and SpyBot.
Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to ask, after you do the, after you empty out, check for bad, and then you delete them, shouldn't you go in and click on the quarantine items and then delete those as well?
You can. You don't have to. It's just all it is a laundry list.
But doesn't that build up?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it can. Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely would. So it's not a bad thing to delete.
I can have her add that.
Yeah, she
Matter
should.
Fact, tell you what, email her back.
I did.
Yeah, and just have her add that because, like I say, she's looking for feedback on this. This is something that my wife developed, and I know, again, this week she had a lot of folks emailing her for this checklist, and I think it's very helpful because I didn't write it, and it's in user terms. And you can actually understand them.
Yes, it was very well explained.
Well, thank you very much. I know she's probably listening and really appreciates it.
Well, thank you. We enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
Sometimes it helps to have a novice write the instructions because then they know how to work.
Well, that's what my wife did, and she had me sit there on both programs and, you know, walk through the steps as she did them. And then she wrote her own notes down to make it as user-friendly. And like I say, there's not a machine that goes out of our shop that she doesn't hand those folks because we put both the Adware and SpyBot on the machines, and they also get this step-by-step sheet to walk through, and they love it.
It's although great service.
On the other side, sometimes they're too novice. I wrote a database once that had required fields that the user had to enter in. And instead of the person who was writing the instructions, instead of saying enter in the required data in the yellow fields, they said keep clicking the error button until it goes away.
Nah.
Oh, boy.
Our next caller, Ron from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I'll be brief. I am running Windows XP Home, and about one out of five boot ups, my computer is not finding the configuration system file. I get a error message. Windows could not start because the following file is missing or corrupt. Windows System 32 config system. I've got to throw my Windows disk in, boot from the CD drive, and then it's fine for maybe five more boot ups, and then I get the same error message.
That's almost exactly what happened to this laptop Dave's playing with.
Yeah, I'm working on wraps.
Let me just give you a brief history of what I did. I did a brand new clean install. I went up to my local computer store, bought a full install of XP as opposed to the upgrade.
Yeah.
Reformatted the hard drive. I even went to the Mac Store Diagnostics site, downloaded the diagnostics on the floppy, checked the hard disk. It came back. It was okay. I'm ready to go, Apple. What do you think?
Steve will tell you that's a great idea.
But it still sounds like that hard drive, you know, is an issue.
Well, your problem here was the Lasser virus was corrupting Windows system files.
Yeah, you've got all the updates for this?
Yep. I literally just bought last week. I went and bought the full install, and I did. I went to the Windows site, downloaded all the updates, and the Windows that I bought had the Service Pack 2 already on it. So
see,
I did go and get the additional update.
If you've done a
clean
install and that file's getting corrupt, I would more tend to point towards the hard drive. One thing that you can do, and this will give you kind of a hint, that is if you go to the start run, type CMD for command. It'll open up a DOS window. Type in check disk space C colon space /R and have it run a check disk, and it'll tell you it goes through five different tests, and it'll report if there's any known or crossed linked files and all that type of stuff and any bad sectors. So give that a shot and let us know how you make out.
All right, back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's an incredible honor
that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
We're going to go back to the phones, and I'm delighted to say it's Jerry from Chilai. Jerry, welcome.
How are you, man?
We're peachy.
How are you doing,
are you?
Stranger?
I'm doing okay, thank you. I'm calling in regards to the gentleman who called a few minutes ago about email accounts and using Thunderbird and so forth.
Yes.
Most of the free web-based mail programs now, like Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail, and so forth, they all offer pop mail access as well.
Oh, there you go.
They didn't used to, but now they're doing that as a matter of convenience because they know a lot of people want that. And that gives you the opportunity to use a software program that you're familiar with already.
Like Thunderbird.
And you can aggregate all of your mail together into one place. So with Thunderbird, you can check your Yahoo account, your Gmail account, your ISP's account, your work account, all of those things together with one single program.
See, and believe me, when you hear this man say something, it's gospel.
Well, yeah. we usually recommend to a lot of people, too, that they actually get free accounts or get their own domain name, which they can use for email, because that way it allows them to change their internet provider whenever they want to.
Right.
Without having to change their email address.
And a lot of times people keep, you know, an extra Hotmail or extra Yahoo account for filling out web forms, so that's where all the junk mail goes.
You're right.
Exactly. Or for different purposes. You use one address for the family and another address for work or, you know.
Right. And if you get your own domain name, you can do that very easily.
Right. You can do whatever. You can have as many addresses as that you want when you have your own domain name, and you can direct them to a variety of places. But I hear from a lot of people who are always saying, you know, well, I can't give up my AOL account or I can't give up this account or whatever because so many people know that address and they write to me.
Right.
So the sooner you start weaning people away from that address, the sooner you don't have to pay sometimes for multiple accounts.
Yeah. And the way you do that is you get the one account you really want to keep, and then every time somebody emails you something, you answer from the new account.
Right, and you remind them, say, you know, thanks for writing, but remember, here's my new address now or something.
Right, and then until you get to the point where it's time to shut it down.
Right, because no internet provider is going to give you forwarding services, like the phone company might forward your phone number. Your internet provider is not going to say, oh, Joe's not a customer of ours anymore. They've gone to XYZ company, you know, reach them over there.
Right.
And we have to mention, though, that Jerry does host the Soundbites program on the website.
Greatest host on earth, yes. CLSS Enterprises, looking at the bottom of every one of our pages.
Yep. And I have to thank you, too, sir. You helped out a client of mine down in Canandaigua, and she was just extremely pleased on the ease and way that you gave her full control, but not have to worry about the upfront maintenance part of it.
Well, that's nice.
Well, you know, and I got to tell you the truth. Everybody I send to Jerry says the same thing. It's wonderful. It's great.
Yeah,
it's terrific service.
Yeah,
it's great business. You know, you're giving the rest of us a bad name. You're raising the bar a little high here,
Well,
Jerry.
A lot of people ask me, where do we go when we have a problem? Jerry.
But here's how he did it. I mean, this lady called him, and the guy's in the middle of dinner.
Yeah.
And he stops eating dinner to help her out.
Yeah, it's really unreasonable, Jerry. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's going above and beyond, and he's got to be commended for that. He does an excellent job.
And I have to call you for lunch one of these days.
It depends how much for dinner, I guess. Maybe I wouldn't.
No, she couldn't thank me enough for recommending you because you made her life so simple. But yet she has full control.
See, and Jerry does all the work, and you look good. Isn't that the way it should be?
Well, I like recommending good people.
Exactly.
You know, and Jerry, I know I can recommend folks there, and I yet to hear anybody say, oh, no, I wouldn't. But this woman's going to pass his name around to other people.
And well, they should.
And they should, yes.
So to get back to the point, enough patting him on the back. Let's get back to the point, which is
that he can't get the
right, which is that, in fact, with Thunderbird, with most of the Yahoo type webmail places, you can in fact get POP service.
You can, or IMAP service too. And in fact, there's a service out there, a company called FuseMail, which is quite nice because it allows you to fuse many of all of your email accounts that you might have into one place, and lets you interface either through the web or with your POP mail or IMAP client like Thunderbird as well.
F-U-S-E fuse.
F-U-S-E-M-A-I-L.
Cool.
They have a free service, and they also have a number of paid services. But the nice thing about it, especially with IMAP services, is if you're interfacing with Thunderbird or Outlook or Eudora or one of those programs, the content is stored on their server, not yours. So no matter where you access it from your office, from your laptop, from your neighbor's house, from the library, you're going to see the same things all the time, so you don't have to keep syncing all of your mail accounts together if you check from multiple places.
Right, exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thanks, Jerry. Really appreciate that. I'm going to give you a call for lunch one of these days now that the quarter's over and I'm semi-free. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob, I'm a professional. Don't try this at home, Linton. And me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Next week. Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Sound Bites. Our next caller is Bob from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right. I'm getting knee-deep into Linux.
Oh, good for you.
And yes, I'm thoroughly enjoying it, except for one thing. I'm installing a Mandrake basically version of it and all their
10.1
tools around it.
Or whatever it is now?
9.2, I think I have.
Oh, that's old.
Yeah, I know they're up to 10, but that's what I got.
All right.
My question is that I'm having difficulty with the video drivers, and basically I can see things, but my cursor has a nice little arrow to it, but to the left is maybe an inch long thing. It looks like a barcode.
Yep. I hate to say this to you, but that's a problem with 9. A lot of the video drivers are very old. 9 is like a year old. And a lot of the systems that it was originally designed for The other way around. A lot of the machines that have come out in the last even 2 years simply are not in, are not recognized by Mandrake. Mandrake has a great ability to pick up on your hardware when you install it, but it version 9 will recognize some things incorrectly if they're newer than when 9's drivers were created.
I'm installing this on an old Compact Disc Pro.
Okay.
And, you know, it's coming up with the chipsets and stuff like that, but one of the difficulties is it asks for how much video memory do you have. And they're buried deep within Compact's design.
Right. There are two ways to do it. There's several ways to do it.
Should I go to 10?
Pardon?
Should I go to the newest?
10 might help. The first thing you should do, if you've got this and you want to use it, here's what you want to try first. Start with 4 meg.
Okay.
See what you get. Mm-hmm. And then up it and up it and up it. You can do that without reinstalling the whole software. See if that helps. You might be able to do it a lot easier by finding the original documentation. Or it may be, depending on which version of Compact's ROM you have, it may indeed be, particularly if the video is on the motherboard, it may be listed in the BIOS.
Okay.
If you take a look through the BIOS. But that's, without at least knowing that much, again, 10 will try to find that for you and actually query the card. 9 was older and wouldn't.
Okay. I was just figuring that, you know, 10, if you know, in any later versions that came out would just, you know, continue on with the same type of drivers for this old machine.
No, they're always updating in particularly in terms of finding hardware. Linux Mandrake is really good.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Give it a shot. Let us know. Thanks. Our next caller, Tom, calling on a cell phone. What's up, Tom?
Hi, guys. Enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I got a quick question here. Mm-hmm. Want to put a new hard drive in the machine running XP Home with the updates. Ultimately, I want to get rid of the 5400 RPM original drive. Should I just put in the second new hard drive and use my restore disk to get the operating system and everything over to that and then take the old one out? Or yeah.
Well, you can put the new drive in, do the restore disk, and then set up your second your old hard drive as a slave. That way any of your data or any of that stuff you can grab from there. What you can also do is do the transport where you export all your files and settings out to a folder on the old drive. Then when you hold up install the new hard drive, you'll be able to go to the old hard drive, grab that folder, and restore things back to the way they were.
Okay, we're done for another week. I want to thank all the people who called in. Apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be here next Sunday at 11 a.m. on Soundbites. Only on 1180 WHAM.